You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's DOD. I'm Mike Seymour, and just for once, I'm going to lead off. But as always, John Montgomery, how are you, sir?
How's it going? He's like, I'm leading off today.
Yeah. Damn it, I want to lead off. Hey, how's things?
Good. Very busy, but things are good. We're actually working on our first Agency Red project here in-house. And cool. Of course, the agency has come to the right place, I feel, for that, based upon all the stuff that FX Guide and FX PhD has been doing with the Red camera. We've got some pretty solid workflows worked out. But again, just setting it up for the first time officially here at Hootenanny, of course, it does take some effort to get all the guidelines laid out for these guys and procedures in place. So it's been a lot of fun, but obviously a wealth of material for them with PhD.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a sad day here at PhD because we're reporting this on the passing of Stan Winston, who is, you know, obviously one of the pillars of the visual effects industry, that anything that we do, as they say, is built on the shoulders of, if we can see further, we're on the shoulders of giants, and definitely in the case of Stan Winston, a giant in the visual effects field. And I've got to say, John, it's extraordinary. I obviously thought I knew Stan Winston's career, and I've been to Stan Winston Productions, and, you know, so it's not like I felt uninformed. I even have the book, but I thought I'd actually IMDb and look back past my kind of memory, back past the Terminator and the Jurassics and the, you know, all the early stuff, and just try and find some of that stuff that he did way back at the beginning of his career. And
the television stuff.
I was not disappointed. Do you know, and I should have known this, I guess, but do you know he actually worked in special effects makeup on Roots, the 1977 Mark miniseries?
Yeah, well, I'll point out, too, for people interested in historically, in addition to IMDb, the Stan Winston Studios has a nice little historical timeline as well.
Oh, do they? Should look at that.
Yeah. It's not very in-depth, but it does give you an idea of, like, I did the same thing, Mike, today. I was like, oh, my God. It's like, look at all this stuff that he's done outside his, you know, the Oscar-winning films and big-budget films that he's done.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's just an extraordinary career. And I mean, really, one of those, you know, you just don't expect to see another Stan Winston in your lifetime, if you know what I mean.
No.
And the fact that he helped form Digital Domain, the fact that he just worked on so many films that are beyond hits, they're iconic, you know.
That's not often known, I don't think, by people, that he was actually part of the original Digital Domain.
Oh, really?
No, I don't think, you know. Yeah. Because he got out of it when opening up their digital one, right? Digital aspects of it, obviously.
Productions, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have an article, of course, in respect of his passing and trying to be positive about his amazing contribution at FX Guide, including a photo I took in the, the conference room of Stan. You know, I think if you want to, I don't know, rejoice in a career, as Eric Roth from the VES said, you just need to have a look at that photo I stitched together in the conference room. And I will point out, the photo that we've got on FX Guide is not actually the entire conference room. It's actually sort of two walls primarily. There's another whole wall of stuff that I, you know, didn't want to get in because we didn't want a picture that was like 8,000 pixels across, that included, you know, vampire stuff and just a whole lot of amazing things from toy soldiers. And so, you know, some of that stuff just isn't in that photo. So it's like, if you could take a photo like this, that's only part of somebody's collection and have such amazing kind of, as I say, iconic images that, you know, from,
it's a collage, really, literally.
It's
amazing.
So we put the high-res file there, which we don't normally do, the 4,000 by 1,000. And if you're in PhD, I'd recommend that you click it and have a look. And just, you know, think about somebody's legacy that he's contributed so much. And, you know, it's every once in a while like this, I think we sort of need to look back rather than forward in our industry and acknowledge. Because there's a vast amount of people that will have come in contact with Stan Winston and his company, and then gone out into the rest of the industry and taken with them his sense of professionalism, commitment to the story, and just, you know, overall love of filmmaking. It's amazing.
It really is, and it's a good time. I think there's a certain thing, of course, to be saddened by the passing of someone, but it's also a great time, and it's a shame it doesn't happen when alive, but actually to celebrate what they've done in their life as well. You know, I've always liked that attitude at wake or funeral or some kind of party even that someone's had when they've passed, and a time to really take a look at what they've done in their life, and especially with Stan Winston, the kind of, as you say, the commitment and, you know, really how, what he's added to the industry. I mean, it would not be the same without him.
62 is too young to go, I must say.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, but again, I mean, it's just really a wonderful breadth and depth of work that he's done. And it's just, yes, sad, but at the same time, just also such inspiration what he brought to the field and the world.
Sure. And of course, our sympathy goes to his wife, son and daughter and related family, grandchildren, etc. At this time, as well, all the employees at Stan Winston Productions and Stan Winston Studios, who must be really mourning their loss of their, of their founder. So we'll move on from that to FX PhD business. As I say, please have a look at the article on FX Guide and remember a great man. So, John, what have we been up to in the Chicago office?
Well, as I said at the opening, I've just mainly been focused here in the last several days on getting that pipeline put in place here, making sure it's all set up here for the Big Red project. So,
oh no, but I meant actually in terms of PhD.
We've been recording the smoke classes here. Chris has been in a couple of days finishing those up, getting those out and together and out for the world. Response to his class has been really great. I'm really happy with finding Chris Cranus to do the smoke course this term, because again, making up for what we've done in the past, I think has really come through and people really enjoyed his classes.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And So that's been fantastic. And on top of that, been doing hopefully the final beta testing on the exam stuff. We said that a lot, but again, it's just, you know, so much to deal with and so much to take care of in the intricacies of kind of what's going on behind the scenes. You know, what do we do when X happens and Y happens and you patch something and something else you notice comes through. But that's coming along together really well. And we've had a lot of questions from people actually about that. So it'll be really great. We'll be rolling those out for the hopefully at the end of this week for the January term members and get that turned around really quickly with new improved exams for the people who are taking the courses in our current term. So that's been a lot of work.
Guest spotting for me on the last background fundamentals next week, because I won't be around next week.
Yes, I'll be doing that definitely for sure. So as well as appearing in a slightly revamped, we'll see how it works out, final class for the DV Rebel course as well.
So I should try, because if people don't know, I'm going to China on Friday, and if I can, I'll try calling you from China and see if we can at least get a 5-minute DOD happening in China. But it may be crappy reception.
It's also when traveling, it sometimes seems really easy to get something done. But based upon schedule and on where you need to be, when you have commitments and so forth, sometimes it's kind of hard to work out those details. For some reason, for me, it seems harder to do that remotely than it is when you're at home with kind of your schedule all set up.
And I'll be flying around inside China and stuff. So it's like, well, I'll, you know, 2 o'clock. Well, hang on a second. That's when I'm on a plane. And I got to get, and I went to be at a hotel, and I'll have checked out.
It doesn't have any of those crazy half-hour changes, though, like India does, I don't think. Does China have any of those where you go and you're half-hour away?
I'm going with Jimmy, of course, who, was born in China. So he is completely the guy to be with because, you know, we go to those really good restaurants and hang out at that. really good bars, but he's already been telling me that he's going to try and take me to some amazing places. But it's actually, they've been moving around so much in China. We've got three lectures up there and some fun stuff we're doing for PhD. And so I don't actually know how much time I'm going to have to do anything, really. I'm going to pack a couple of muesli bars because I doubt I'm going to get to a restaurant someday. I'll be like sitting in airport lounges waiting for the next connecting flight.
Yes, exactly. So, you always set out with an ideal that you hope you might be able to do that, but sometimes the reality sets in and not so much.
Not so much. Hey, I recorded a really good, speaking of PhD, I recorded a really good class last night with Rose Draper for the photography class. We were doing touch-up work, you know, like how to do touch-up on models and stuff. And she'd just done so much work. I think she'd spent 6 to 8 hours preparing solidly for this class in terms of prepping the files and developing up techniques and, you know, having it all so it was easy to go through. And I so love it when we get a professor just put so much work into just preparing something and prepping. And that's in addition to, of course, just making sure that she had all the techniques down and stuff. She obviously is a whiz on Photoshop, but, you know, far be it from her to just dial in a ring. She's like solidly worked up this great presentation on, because, you know, obviously retouch in my personal world goes beyond what I feel comfortable with. Retouch on a L'Oreal ad, as I call it, you know, will go to a point where I think they've taken it too far, and yet it's an entire industry that, you know, people ask you to fix every little individual hair and every individual eyebrow.
The dreaded shampoo commercial.
Exactly. So she does the whole lot. She takes it to a point that's beyond the point that, you know, I have all sorts of issues with the sexual politics of it and stuff. But, it's a necessary evil that, you know, you need to know how to do that stuff. And she does a cracking job. So I want to thank Rose for that because it was really good.
Yeah, that's fun to see someone do that. And a good point by you as well about the type of effort that the professors spend getting ready for a class. It is not that 30 minutes that you see them. You know, I know that's apparent in many of the courses, but our professors really spend a great deal of time thinking about the content that they're presenting, the class preparing, and making sure it comes across. You know, it's one of those things, like our classes, we like them to be a little bit loose, right? I mean, I don't worry too much if I hit a wrong button now and then or anything like that.
Oh, no.
You know, it's nothing like that. But what we really try to do is let you know that we really try and prepare for them and prepare the content. So there's a big difference.
Yeah, totally. I couldn't agree more.
It's like, because you were doing that, weren't you? Didn't I talk to you on the weekend? Were you in on the weekend?
Yeah. I was spent 8 hours in Flame working out the issues that I was going to show on a thing for background. And the thing is, I was deliberately doing the good, the bad, and the ugly. So what I wanted to do was show not just the perfect way of doing things if you've got 20/20 hindsight, but sitting down at a shot, you know, I did this was a complete dead end, I was a moron for doing this, then I went back and did this other thing, and then look at this, and then I realized blah blah blah, and you know, try and do what's not, and show bad red footage, you know, because I don't want to be like so look at this red footage, it's impossible to key, it's noisy, it's crap. Now, of course, I immediately showed, you know, a way to make it not crap and look really good and be excellent for keying, but, you know, I wanted to sort of not make it, because what you don't get is that honesty if you're working for a equipment manufacturer, because they're not going to show you, well, here's a crap image from our camera.
Yep.
They're going to just say, well, unless you do the right settings, it won't look good. It's like, well, I've had crap images, and you're not doing the crap images, and what am I doing wrong? And I think it's worth saying, well, look, you know, this is a sensible transfer that we did. Didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it at this point. It's absolutely appalling. Now we, you know, can go back and do this and it'll be much better, and this is what you need to do. And sometimes you need to, you know, that's true. I think of any job, you need to be able to back up and get perspective and say, you know, this we got to stop this and go back and retransfer or whatever. And this is the case with Red, certainly, just like film. So we went back and retransferred it, and it worked.
Yeah, I like your comment. I think we're running up a brick wall or dead end or something like that, because that does happen working on shots. I mean, I'll do stuff I think is going to be the right way to approach something and go, oh, yeah, you know, not so much. That's not going to work for me. Backtrack. So, very, very interesting. And yes, I joke with you a lot about your smoothness in recording a class in a single take, but that's because as you point out, the 8 hours that you put in beforehand, prepping for it. So it's not like you're just.
Well, I think the other thing is with background, I don't want to be making it just a Flame class. Obviously, we don't have big flame course this term, so I'm happy to be doing more flame in background. But, yeah, you know, people say, can't you do something without any cuts, right? Can't you just do it, you know, like exactly as you did it? And the trouble is, if you did it exactly as you did it, like on Rose's thing for 6 hours or my thing for 8 hours, it wouldn't be a very interesting course. You know, this week on the class, we're doing more roto. Next week on the class, we'll be doing a bit more roto. And the week after that, we'll probably finish the roto in about an hour and a half from now. And then we'll, you know, and it's like, okay. So I do think it's, but so I am cognizant of the desire to not have the cooking show where it always works and it's perfect. So that's what this week's background was, me just not screwing up, but just saying, well, these are the honest mistakes that you make. And certainly someone like me, the biggest risk I have is just arrogance, right? I sat down at the box and, you know, had it in my head how I was going to do it and just started plowing away because I was tired and it was first thing in the morning and it was, yep, you know, the weekend, and I was like, you know, I want to be here, and I'll just get stuck into it. And don't complain, I'll just get straight stuck into it. And so I straight got stuck into it listening to music, and then when I put my head up sensibly about an hour and a half later, I realized that, you know, I'd wasted a huge amount of time. And it was just arrogance, right? And but, you know, I mean, that can happen with clients in the room as well. You know, you get stuck into it.
That's actually interesting. Those early stages of doing stuff like that, I'd like not having clients there for that reason, actually, yeah, whenever possible, you know, just from a standard procedure. I don't know for what it's like in Sydney, but it's changed a little bit in Chicago as agencies have laid out people, and they've less, you know, the agency people have had to do more different jobs, so they're not able to just hang out. But when I started, they would come in and spend all day. I mean, they would come in at 9, stay until 5. And
and then they'd be like, what's for lunch? You'd be like, I don't know.
And I hated that aspect of that normal thing where they're like, well, why are you starting over? I'm like, well, it's natural sometimes to, I'm not really starting over. But actually, that technique didn't work. They're like, oh, really? It didn't work? What? Nah. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, that sometimes... You know?
Now, let me shift a gear here for a second and change the subject, because I do want to tell you about something very positive and fun, as opposed to, you know, feeling bad about me being an arrogant dick and also passing of industry giants. I got a chance to talk to Kerner Optical, to Brian Gernard, who's miniature supervisor for Kerner Optical. He did Indiana Jones during the week. So Pablo Hellman was the VFX supervisor for ILM, but Brian was basically in charge of Kerner Optical's contribution, which, you know, is a separate company now from ILM Model Shop. And this, for me, this is like, I don't know, I got to fess up. This, for me, is like why I like FX Guide. I get to sit and talk. Actually, it went over 2 days because we ended up running out of time. We called back and did it. 2 days just discussing the intimate details on how you break a dam apart, nuke a town and build a pyramid. I mean, tell me that I can just do this for the rest of my life and I will be in heaven.
You enjoyed, you know, it, huh?
I mean, this was just like, honestly, as I was writing up my notes, I'm like, this is what it must feel like to work at Cinefix. Yeah, they did great stuff. It was a classic dump tank, you know, mm-hmm. And I've been reading about dump tanks since I was a kid, right? So the dump tank for the end of Indiana Jones, which I think is a really good shot where the you know what happens, and then the water comes rushing in. And then try not to spoil it for anyone that hasn't seen. And so we discussed the mesa wall that's used there, and not only discussed it, but actually went into, like, because this is the great thing about FX Guide, I think so much, same extent as PhD. So, you know, when I read a thing, they're like, oh, we built this wall. And I'm like, well, what was in the wall? Like, I want to know exactly what was in the wall. And you know, oftentimes that all gets skimmed over, right? It's like, well, we built this wall and there was a big dump tank and then the ball collapsed. And I'm like, yeah, but how'd you actually build the wall? And he's like, well, we only use organic material and we use this vermiculite, which is like rock but popcorn, and it pops to 10 times its size but the same weight. And we did that so that it would. And then we laid it with Primacord, and we're going through all the discussions of the Primacord and how it explodes. And when we got to Doomtown, which is the nuked town, oh, my God, he just – I mean, you know what? And then he lost it in terms of enthusiasm. And I've got this great quote from him just talking about it. And I wish that I would be allowed – we can't do it as a podcast, but I wish we were allowed to let you guys hear directly the enthusiasm in Brian's voice as he talked about nuking this town. And let me read you a quote that I wrote up yesterday from the interview, because I think it's just an absolute classic, right? So the point about this, I just set it up, is that if you don't know, a nuclear shockwave hits the town, and it's the beginning of the film. And they had a vast set, rigged with stuff, right? So there's 1,500-gallon air cannons. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
So just vast bloody things, because they're going to have this 60-foot square, beautifully manicured, gorgeous town model blasted apart. And then in all the houses, they've laced them with primer cord, so they'll explode and then be hit by the blast of the air cannons. Then they've got other air cannons coming up from underneath, shooting inside the house to act, quote, like, as he said, like a shotgun, right? So here's the quote. He says, in the shot, the air cannons are firing, and then boom, 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 they're coming at camera. And just before the cannon goes off, the actual primer cord fires, and that shock moment where the building becomes, like, unglued. It's like an egg in space, and the energy from 100-gallon air cannon, it hits it and kaboom, and then it knocks it, and then the debris created, and it hits towards Cameron. It's just, and then we set off the mortars with the blasted aluminium oxide, which is like a shotgun inside the house, for that really cool exploded look. I just thought, and I wrote that up verbatim. I couldn't cut it, right? I was just like, oh yeah.
You definitely get a feel for his enthusiasm.
Oh, it was just, and it's not like he's not like me, right? Like, he's not a hyper kind of guy. He's really calm and normal and sensible,
yeah.
And great individual to talk to. But you could just tell as he was going through the details of how they'd cascade the explosions and the air cannons and the primer cord and the mortars through this 60-foot set, just, you know, the attention to detail. And you know, and again, we managed to get into that really great level of detail about, you know, exactly what kind of dust they used and, you know, how they built things. And so enthusiastic was I after talking to Brian at Kerner Optical. I swear to God, I was on the net looking at how to make your own vacuum form plastics. And I was seriously contemplating building my own vacuum molding system.
Classic.
Because I was like, well, I could do that. I could build these cars and I could make them and I could, like, I could, you know, and they had like 18 people working on it for 12 weeks. So, like, I don't really think I'm going to be able to make a town and nuke it. But still, and, you know, it just combines everything that I love. I mean, obviously, they combine a lot of digital stuff into, especially their waterfall stuff as well. But, you know, it was miniatures, it was explosions, it was lighting, high-speed photography. They shot it all outside, which is kind of interesting because, you know, I knew that was a big secret that Kerner had, or not such a big secret, but a great technique they had for using natural lighting on these miniatures, right? But I didn't realize the precision at which it went off. Like, the explosion of the one I just described, so to have that backlit, they had to get the sun at just the right angle. And they literally calculated 3 weeks ahead where the sun would be, so that when they started building the outdoor platform to put all the models that they'd obviously spent weeks mm-hmm. building out there, they knew exactly where the sun would be. But so precise was it, they only had a 10-minute window upon which, without cloud cover, they could shoot. Now, if they had cloud cover for multiple days, they'd have to move the entire set, right? So it's just like, on Thursday, there better be no cloud cover at 3:35 p.m. because you have exactly 10 minutes in which the sun will be correct at the right angle so that the explosion will look good at 120 frames a second. I love Kerner Optical. That's everything about those guys. It's just why we're in the business.
Oh, yeah. They're really fascinating stuff. Really good stuff.
So anyway, it's my that was my joy of the week.
That
so that's coming up
week.
In an FX Guide article. And I got a few bunch of good articles coming up in FX Guide, which is great, and some really cool stuff we're doing for PhD, especially when I get back from China.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, hey, I got to skedaddle out of here. I've got a ton of stuff to do today. But we'll be hopefully talking to you next week. Hopefully we can work it out. Maybe I can record it from my iPhone or something. If it doesn't work out, that we can't have time. So it'll be fun. Have a good time and safe travels, and don't work too hard. Do take the time to go at least one good meal when you're there.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. But sleeping on the Great Wall of China is my thing. Looking forward
life,
to. But more about that later.
Life is pretty good when that's the case. So enjoy that, and I'll be interested in hearing how the atmospheric conditions are in Beijing just a few short months before the Olympics.
So. Thought I'd do a couple of 100-meter dashes just to
just to see how the air feels. See.
Report back. Like, yep, just going to do a whole marathon.
The Australian Olympic Committee.
Yeah,
sending you.
Yeah, exactly, you know. Because we take our sport pretty seriously down here. I thought, I'd be a good ambassador for sport. A couple of laps of the pool and just see how that high diving board is going. Until next time, I am an unfit Mike Seymour, and on behalf of myself, John, and all the team at FXPHD, all the professors, we thank you for joining us. Talk to you guys next week. See ya.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FXPHD.
So you know what we forgot?
What?
The leak.
So the only people that are going to notice this leak are people that actually were listening to the DOD and then said, hang on a second, my iPod hasn't run out. And
how much silence do you think we should put in?
How much silence? I don't think we should put silence in, I think, because once the credits played, I'd have stopped listening, right?
Just a little bit then, yeah. So just like, yeah, a second and music's done.
Edit this part and in. Then we'll come back with the leak. So I think how can I put this... Don't post in the forums about this? Is that what we're saying?
What happens,
I think it is.
Yes. What happens in the DOD stays in the DOD. And we didn't, in fairness, we didn't say that in the last week's podcast.
Yeah, we said it like about 100
But
times.
We said it like about 100 times in the past. So what are we going to do this week? Our new kind of little angle, you think? Our new...
So I wanted to leak one that John said was far too important to leak. So we're going to leak another one instead, right?
Which
is a good one. It's a very good one. Okay, so in FXPHD, we've obviously been doing visual effects. Then we, a while ago, decided we'd add production into the mix because we thought that production was just such an important part of doing post that it was really good, so that extended out with the red camera and photography and stuff. And that's been really successful for us. And the DOP course this time has been hugely successful.
Again, a natural selection, natural extension of, knowledge and what we're doing, right? It makes sense
to do
that because you go on set, it's really helpful to know this stuff.
And especially with, digital cinematography, the way that it's moving
exactly.
is just increasingly becoming the case. Yeah. So there are a couple of other of those that we have up our sleeve. And the big one that people both have asked for, but we obviously felt from the outset we should be addressing is audio. Because we feel that audio is, just not – A, it's something everybody likes. B, it's something that's not given enough attention. Now, we want audio to be professional audio. So we're not talking about, how to – sort of hang out and play Kumbaya on a beach on a guitar. We mean proper professional audio that you would use in the environment of, doing your business. But there are so many of you that are doing independent film productions, so many of you that are involved in medium and low budget features and stuff, and so many of you that are starting to have to deal with audio because things like the red camera record the audio on it or it's coming in and, right through to obviously the stuff that we had to learn ourselves to set up a PhD and do the podcasting. So John, we're going to do audio, aren't we?
Yes, we are. It's going to be good. And again, this is a natural extension of the kind of stuff that we feel, works in the facility. I mean, take a look at my case here, the kind of stuff that we're doing here. I'm involved with people editing on Avids and so forth. I'm doing design work and other stuff, but occasionally, as you mentioned in FX Guide and FX PhD, these vision guys sometimes get dragged and sometimes somewhat kicking and screaming to the sound world. And so our idea with this is to help ease that transition a bit. And you mentioned A and B, and as most of the stuff that we've done, Mike, on FX Guide and FX PhD, I would say C, stuff that interests us. Stuff that we want to know about,
That's true. No, that is so true. Yeah, it's very
I'm looking forward to the audio classes.
Yeah, no, you totally nailed it. It's been the case that we've felt like, I myself just completely buggered up audio on several occasions.
You buggered up audio.
Oh, no,
really. I've done so many. Oh, my God.
I mean, it was just embarrassing. And there's one DOD, sorry, one background fundamentals that will never be seen by man or dog again. That I just was. Anyway, the windswept one. But the fact is that I had really good information to say in that class, and it's just, I'm going to have to read
it's
it.
It's lost because of technical problems, which
it's
is a
lost
shame.
Because I'm, Yeah. And I would, really think that would be something that most people would have listened to for a while and then switched off because they'd have gone, I'm over it.
Yep.
So we're very lucky to have Kirsten Martin joining us as one of the profs. Now, there'll actually be other people involved in audio as well. David's working with Kirsten, but Kirsten was the person that when I first mentioned Kirsten was doing something with us to one person, they were like, well, where do I sign? I didn't even finish the sentence before. They were like, where do I sign? So we're going to be doing a bunch of stuff, and we're going to be doing obviously audio post-production, but in the same vein, we're also going to be doing some stuff about audio production and you know, things to do with monitoring and miking and stuff. So we'll give you more details on that coming up, but I think we've been filming a bunch of stuff with location audio, and we've been talking to audio people and starting to get that happening. So I'm pretty enthusiastic about it, and we'll obviously give out details when we announce stuff seriously, though we just wanted to give you a huge heads-up leak on what was coming. And again, it's possible because PhD's been expanding. The reason that we're able to do these things is that you guys have been supporting us, and so we have a bit more resources. We're able to extend out, so it's not like we're doing audio and not doing, you know, visual effects. It's just building out from where we are. It's always our plan to try and do this, but I must admit, you know, when we started with a mere 7 courses, you know, in the whole term, who'd have thought we'd been, you know, kicking over 30 now a term. So it's great to be able to do this. It's only because you guys have supported us. It's all running exactly to plan as far as we're concerned, so we're really, really glad about it. But again, all of this is just what we call professional stuff in that you would need to know for doing production and post-production. We're not going to suddenly start doing, you know, completely left field stuff. We're not going to certainly run off and worry about, as I jokingly say, the iLife apps or something. This is not where we're at. But, you know, there's a lot of good hardcore issues to do with audio, syncing rushes, recording on in the field, and just also the dramatic impact, the emotional impact of any shot with and without audio is so startlingly dramatic. John, I remember at SIDGRAPH watching a reel go through in the early days, and there was one that was mute. Mm-hmm. Now, this is SIDGRAPH where it's, you know, technical papers. In the early days, this is not, you know, sort of the whiz-bang laser show that we have at the moment, but, you know, back in the day. And the audience just disengaged from what they were watching and almost became restless when they had this mute demonstration of some rendering techniques. It was stunning to me that even on a technical paper, even when the audio was theoretically nothing to do with it, having a mute video presentation just felt awkward and detracted so much from the obviously extraordinary hard work the researchers have put into doing whatever it was that they were showing. I think it was like some kind of rendering model for stochastic ray tracing or something. So there is almost no circumstance that audio isn't important, and we're certainly looking forward to learning from it.
You hit on head. I was just thinking to myself as you're talking too, I mean, that works for motion graphics design. You know, I mean, you can take a good audio track or good effects to motion graphics, just take those to next level. You know, thinking to visual effects as well. You know, ones I can think of whole discussions on enhancing visual effects films with audio, the roar of the tornado, right, or the growl or something, you know, in Twister. Again, the ties in what we're doing. And I think it's especially important nowadays. It seems to me that we're talking high-end and post-production and specialists, but I do think more and more people are starting to dip into more and more things where they have to have more knowledge about, you know. It's uncommon that a woman is an island and you just get your images and that's all you have to deal with, right?
I feel really strongly that it's still an industry built on specialists.
Yes.
But the specialists, one of the things you want from your specialist is that they understand the process and where they fit into it. Like
exactly.
When I say a specialist, yeah, it isn't a specialist that has no understanding of the other areas. They're not blinkered to their area. It's more the fact that they understand the process, and in this one particular area, they have enormous depth and know really well how it connects with every other area.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true.
You know, Andrew Leslie, the DOP from King Kong and Lord of the Rings and stuff, I mean, he was describing how he frames shots, thinking about what the soundtrack might be. And that's, you know, that's just – he wasn't saying that – he was just saying that casually and talking about how I didn't ask him about it specifically. And it's, you know, almost completely the case that you can sell an effect shot with really good audio. Mm-hmm. And we all know that. I think it's about high time we gave them a bit of love.
Yeah, and that's true in my case here even, Mike, in setting up and going specialist and doing visual effects and then transferring more to maybe motion graphics. But here in reaching a point in my career and helping build out this facility, having that kind of knowledge is incredibly healthy, in fact, required for what I'm doing, you know, to get started. So again, as I like to say, I'm really, really excited about this course.
Yeah, yeah. Between David Fleminger and Kirsten Martin, we are just so lucky to have that audio course covered. And there's a bunch of stuff coming, obviously, but both of those guys have really been working hard on working out what's coming in that particular course. And that will be in the next term, along with a bunch of others. And as always, we appreciate you guys you know, working with us in the way that we know that it would be easier for some of you if we announced all of these, you know, 6 months in advance, but trying to lock in schedules and trying to work out the details of the course and just the machinations of how it works, you know, having, I don't know, phone conferences to discuss, well, what shoots are we got coming up that we can get audio and how do you want the audio and what are you trying to demonstrate in audio so we can film that and mic that correctly so that we give you the material you need so that you can produce the training material that you guys end up getting. It may seem kind of simple, but actually it's a completely complicated flow diagram of connecting events. And it actually takes a long time to organize these things. And so we, you know, we do have this policy of only giving you an idea as to what courses will be repeated and then announcing the new courses close to the date. And I think the other thing, of course, is that even though we're all impatient to find out, it is confusing to those that aren't members of FX PhD if they're hearing about courses, you know, 3 months out that they can't actually do. People like to sign up for things when they hear about them. So that's why we work that way.
Yep, exactly. Well, once again, hey, thanks, guys, for listening past the music.
and thank you.
Because you're our real listeners, those of you listening.
You are the diehards. You are, you know, because we don't like the others. We just like you. You're the only ones we care about. We do the whole thing just for you.
We'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.
Okay.